This is the third of a series of talks with people involved in the recent Fairbanks flood. Today's speaker is Mark Hunt, head of the Municipal Utility System, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Municipal Utilities is a city-owned utility system that operates four basic utility services. We furnish water to the city of Fairbanks. We have a small steam heat system in the center of Fairbanks. We furnish telephones to the Fairbanks and Fairbanks area, and we furnish electrical service to the Fairbanks area itself and not the surrounding area. I'm general manager in charge of all these utilities.
On the weekend of the flood, when did you, say, first become aware of a threat to the utility system?
Well, of course, we were aware that there was a crest supposedly on the way, that the river would be high. We tried to make preparations during the afternoon at 5 o'clock, which is the normal time for our people to go home. I told everybody involved, all the outside workers, the journeyman-type people, to go and get something to eat and report back to their various office and headquarters so that we would have them available. So probably along about 4:30, 5 o'clock, we became aware that things just were not going to stop where they were supposed to, and we would have to prepare for trouble.
By this time, had Hamilton Acres and Island Home, the utilities there, already been affected?
No, I doubt it. Mm-hmm. The first utilities to really be affected by the flood, and you'll have to excuse me because times are kind of vague. We weren't running a log. The first thing that really got bad was the river crossing. Both power and telephone going over to Island Homes. And we tried to get a truck in there. By this time, we were already isolated from there. We tried to get a truck in there to use as a dead man and an anchor to shore it up. We failed. The truck drowned out on the way. And consequently, we lost that crossing. But that was the first real trouble. From then on, it was just basically water getting into the telephone cables and shorting out pieces and bits of cable at a time. We maintain telephone service. Your effect when a cable gets wet is like half the people in town picked up their receivers. And what happens then, your switchboard jams and your remaining telephones can't work because all they get is no dial tone. So we had people in the switchboard room, and as the cable went back bad, they'd paper it out, put paper between the relay contacts to isolate that cable. And this way, we managed to keep the phones in town that were able to work working. And that continued until we completely lost the basement, and that lost our main switchboard.
What time did this occur? Do you remember?
Sometime after midnight, but I can't tell you. Between midnight and 1 o'clock, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And supposedly after the crest was here.
How was the electrical system affected by this time?
Well, the electrical system was basically unaffected by the whole flood. We kept power from the power plant during the whole flood. We kept most of all our distribution circuits hot. We lost bits and pieces, single services where people had transformers and vaults in the basement and this kind of stuff. But anybody in town who had the facilities to use electricity could have used it all during the flood. We had no major interruptions there at all. The water system was the same way. We had a lot of breaks. We had a lot of boats and trucks and tanks hit fire hydrants and crack them and break them. Our water usage went up from about 1 million gallons a day to 4.25 million gallons a day. And this was all leaks that we had in the system. But we did maintain power and we did maintain treated water through the whole system. You could turn on a water tap anywhere in town and drink the water that came out.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything special you had to do to, as far as the water system is concerned, because of the flood? Change in pressure or change in treatment?
We changed treatment somewhat. We did not have the manpower to soften water at 4 million gallons a day. We have the facilities to soften that much if we're prepared for it. But because we were short of people, because times were rough, we quit softening water. We continued to filter. We continued to treat chlorine. In fact, this is one of the changes we made, is we upped the chlorine content in the water for two reasons. One, to make sure it was safe, and another one was to make people believe it was safe. We had a lot of doubt in some of the schools where people were refugees, whether or not they could use the water. Mm-hmm. And when it smelled chlorine, they quit boiling.
Right. Right. How did, what time, say, the steam system start being affected? This would have been in down, where is the steam system located? Could you describe this briefly?
Just basically in the downtown area and the business places. It mm-hmm. picks up a few residences on the way. We shut that down deliberately because the river undercut First Avenue, and we have a high pressure steam line that runs there. We were afraid that if the river got into it, it would break, and then of course we lost everything. So we deliberately shut that off about 2 hours before the water got to it. Mm-hmm. As it was, the pipes were still hot enough that when we did overtop and fill the utilidors, we had some busted pipes, some cracked valves and things like this. But
can
we
you
shut
recall
it down.
What time of night it was that you shut it down?
We probably shut that down somewhere around 10 o'clock in the evening.
The steam system then does not service at all on the other side of the river for the hospital?
No, no, the hospital has their own heating plant. We serve buildings like the Northward, the Polaris, Woolworths, the Penny Store here. Mm-hmm. Most of the businesses up and down 2nd Avenue, as far up Cushman as Maine Junior High. And but basically, there's only about 175 customers total on the steam system.
I see.
Back to the water a minute. Perhaps it'd be of interest to know just where the Fairbanks water supply comes from. In other words, where do the utilities get the water?
Our water is supplied by 3 deep wells. Plus, there are also 3 deep wells in there for fire protection that will kick extra water into the system. But our basic use are these 3 wells near the treatment plant. The actual supply, the wells are used for cooling water in the condensers of the power plant. And from the condensers, they come to the treatment plant. At this point, part of the water is further treated for drinking, and the rest of it's spilled back to the river, the excess water. So our water supply are deep wells right alongside the Chena River.
So you're also responsible for the sewage operation? Is it?
No, that's no. City general government.
I see.
Have nothing to do with that.
I see. Could you describe, say, this, you know, the operation of some of the crews by any chance? Could you roughly describe the conduct of the electrical plant during this, some of the problems that they ran into during Monday night, Tuesday morning, I guess.
Well, our main problem with electricity at this time was we lost a few poles, a few went over. Our major problems were with underground cable and underground transformers. I think most of the time with the electrical crews were spent in disconnecting services, trying to save transformers that were in danger of blowing up. And cutting out some individual services. They also were the boys that tried to get in and save that river crossing. From after we had reached the crest, why then our major problem was guy on poles that started to lean from water action. We lost some of our streetlight controllers because they flooded, and we went around, bypassed those to keep the streetlights on. We thought that with all the boat travel we were having at night, rescue operations, with the danger of looting, it was important to keep as much streetlights as we could, and that was a big part of their job.
Did they have, I presume they, like any of the other operations, had a problem of getting personnel there and keeping them there? Not so much keeping them there, but did they have trouble manning the stations?
No, we had people, of course, we're like everybody else in this town. I suppose over half of us own river boats, and we had our own boats that belonged to some of our people. A little later in the flood, we managed to get from the Corps of Engineers two of these track vehicles. We used one of them for the electric department and one for the telephone department. This also helped us out. But basically, at the start of the flood, guys got to work and got back to us on inner tubes, on rafts, on boats, wading up to their neck any what way you can name. But we didn't have a shortage of people. We had the people we needed when we needed them. They stayed right on the job. We slept in the power plant, in the treatment plant here in this building. We had a chow line set up at the power plant. We were pretty self-contained when we had to be.
I see. How were you connected up to any of the other operations, like civil defense? Were you closely coordinated with them, or were they running a different system and you were trying to take care of the municipal system?
Well, our basic responsibility is the municipal system.
Right.
And that was our first consideration. We did keep in contact with civil defense up until the time they lost that basement over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we lost our communications. But we got our sandbags through civil defense and all this kind of stuff. While we were still fighting a rising crest, we were working with them. Once the flood was here, once we had lost what we did lose and managed to hold what we did hold, our coordination with civil defense, there wasn't any requirements for it.
Mm-hmm.
If we'd have needed them, we'd have hollered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What we could handle, we handled. We did keep coordinated early until we found out that Crest wasn't here at midnight. And maybe we lost a little faith in it. Our biggest battle, of course, was to save the telephone. And before the flood, the power supply for our switchboard, our main switchboard here in town, which is in this building, was in the basement of the building. So as the water started coming up in the street, we started sandbagging around the building in order to save that stuff in the basement, because without the power supply, of course, there's no telephone. We had battery and AC supply, so we could have operated without an external source of power. We sandbagged and kept the water out until it was a couple feet deep around the building. At that point, one of the basement walls bulged enough to put a great big crack in the basement wall, and of course it leaked right through the ground under our sandbags. Mm-hmm. And at that point everything was lost. As it turned out, I don't think we could have sandbagged to the height of the flood.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had about 18 inches of water in the main floor downstairs, which meant in front we'd have had to have better than 4 feet of sandbags, and I don't think we could have held the water.
Mm-hmm.
That much. But had it crested at midnight at the height it said it would, we'd have saved everything.
Mm-hmm. When did the Greenwood Exchange go out? Do you remember? The
Greenwood Exchange never did go out. The exchange itself.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when we lost the switchboard here, Greenwood lost the ability to dial anywhere but Greenwood.
Right.
If you'd have had a 479 number, you could have dialed a 479, but no other. But sometime in the morning, and I can't tell you when because we were all here and not out there, the water out there got deep enough to run into the manholes, and we had an 1800 pair cable that we were just splicing. It was spliced and working, but it wasn't sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what put out most of the Greenwood phones, was that cable. But anybody who was on the smaller cable out there had his phone all during the flood. Again, all he could do was dial his neighbor. He couldn't get downtown, and he couldn't get any Greenwood numbers that were on that wet cable.
I see.
We got a little water in on the floor, probably just wave action from boats and this kind of stuff at Greenwood, but actually none of the equipment there got wet.
Where was the heaviest utility damage? Was it, say, in Hamilton Acres or downtown?
The heaviest damage, the most expensive damage was downtown with $250,000 worth of equipment in the basement, plus that much cable, and this is not installation cost. We lost all the private branch exchanges, or the biggest share of them, about 20 of them. Each one worth anywhere from $6,000 to $30,000 with that same amount of installation time on dollars. So our heaviest damaged utility was probably the telephone, and we suffered the worst damage right downtown here. Mostly because downtown is underground plant and the rest of the town is overhead.
Would there be any, in future planning, would there be any changes because now we know we've had a flood once?
Sure. Our power supply is no longer in the basement, for instance. The private switchboards that are going in are going in on mostly second floors. We'll go ahead and pressurize our cables in an attempt to keep water out of them. But another flood of the same intensity is going to find us weak somewhere else. It can't help but. But we will have a much better chance of riding out this kind of a flood the next time. But it's pretty hard to operate a utility system when your whole service area is under from 2 to 10 feet of water. It's almost impossible.
How could you describe the damage that the steam system took?
Really very little. Most of the steam system is direct burial pipe, and the pipe that was buried in the ground seemed to cushion the shock, the thermal shock from pipe operating at a couple or 300 degrees to 40 degree water. The part that suffered damage was the part that's in Utilidor's downtown, which of course stayed dry until the water got deep enough in the streets to overtop the Utilidor manholes, and then it flooded right now. So that pipe had had a couple hours to cool, but it was probably still at 150 degrees or more because it was insulated when that cold water hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And the damage was thermal shock. Places where connections were bolted together tended to crack, and valves. It's all built with thermal expansion joints in it, but they're designed to take normal expansion, not several hundred or more degrees in 10 seconds. But basically the system was very little damaged. Of course, we do have a bunch of electric motors and pumps that pump the condensate back to the power plant. And all of these, of course, had to be rebuilt or replaced.
Do all the steam pipes now have to be re-insulated?
Those that were in the Utilidor, a big part of them have to be re-insulated. but again, those in the ground, no.
Is there very much that, preventative-wise, that you can do for the seam system, as you have briefly described for the telephone system?
You just shut it off quicker so it's colder when it gets hit.
I see.
We did try, you know, one of the things that the steam and water crews were doing was sandbagging around manholes, building a dam around the manhole so it couldn't take water. Some of the manholes that are reasonably tight, we just pile sandbags on top of to hold down.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. Had the flood been less intense, we'd beat spring floods before, you know,
mm-hmm.
the same way that we have a few manholes that are low that always flood. And these we can take care of, but not when you have every manhole in the system flooded.
How does the prognosis for telephone service look now? What do you expect?
Well, we've got
expect?
90% of our service back. The big thing out right now are the switchboards, which are going in. They're under contract. We have, I guess, over half of the 20 switchboards in town now, ready to be installed. And we have crews working on them. The bigger ones are still not delivered and won't be delivered until late November and December on some of them. But we should have everything back in service by the first of the year. It isn't that bad, really, because even the people with switchboards will have individual telephones in their offices and buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have telephone service, at least emergency-type service, but they won't have all the extensions that they used to have. They won't have the flexibility that they want. But right as of today, I guess we have somewhere between 90 and 95% of our customers back in service of some type or another.
What kind of assistance did you get from other towns in Alaska or, Anchorage?
We had at the peak, we had 14 people from Anchorage up here working in the telephone department. Telephone is the only place that we called for help. Of course, we've had help from the Office of Emergency Planning and the Corps of Engineers in all the departments. And now we're handling all our stuff with our own people plus contracts that have been left by the Corps. A big part of the telephone repair work is being done under contract by the Corps. Our electrical distribution system is being straightened up and put back in shape by a contractor on a contract let by the Corps. The steam system was repaired the same way and the water system the same way.
What kind of damage would the water system have sustained?
Just leaks and breaks. We had fire hydrants underwater all over, and we had traffic up and down the street with boats and trucks and tanks, you name it. And every time they hit a fire hydrant, we had another leak. So most of our damage was that. Also, of course, when basement walls collapsed, that pulled the service loose and we had a leak. We had the Polaris building fire alarm. Fire service tripped during the flood for some reason, and of course we had a gusher there that we had to go in with divers and shut off. All our pumping, or some of our pumping stations and all our fire wells were submerged, and they're full of electrical pumps and controls. These pumping stations are circulating pumps that keep our circulating water system running in the winter. They aren't used in the summer, but of course they had to be cleaned up and dried out for next winter's use.
Then in other words, the water plant and the electrical generating plant came through in pretty fine shape, while the telephone system was probably the worst hit.
Right. We had no particular trouble at the water plant except a little pumping to do. Our sump was deep enough that we couldn't use the normal drain to the river. We had to pump out of it with temporary pumps. The only damage we sustained in the power plant, the only real trouble we had, is that our coal crushing plant was underwater, and we had to get coal in by an alternate route. That was the only damage there.
What was this other route that you were using?
Well, of course, we have a conveyor belt that crosses the river to the power plant up from an underground crusher. The crusher flooded, and what we had to do was, what we ended up doing, was sawing off the cable feed in a box, the cable feed that normally fed the crusher, because we had to use that to run the belt. With that cable sawed off, we had it removed from where it went under the water. We ran temporary leads from where we sawed it off to the conveyor motor so that we could run the belt. The motor was above water. We tore the top off the conveyor, got a front end loader and dump trucks, built a ramp up so that we could dump into the top of the conveyor without using the crusher, loaded coal with the front end loader from our stockpile into the trucks, dumped it into the top of the conveyor and carried it over to the power plant. At the time we got our first coal over that way, we had somewhere between 15 minutes and 30 minutes supply of fuel in the plant.
See, how much of a supply did you have on the other side of the river then?
Oh, we had, when we started, we had, I suppose, somewhere around 4,000 tons. But we lost a big share of that when the river came up. It washed right on down the river. We used all our stockpile. And when the water went down enough so we could move, we got coal in from Wainwright's stockpile. See, we'd used part of our stockpile, this flood we had a few weeks earlier when the railroad washed out. So we were caught with our stockpile partway depleted. Mm-hmm.
Is the electrical system tied in to the Wainwright system or any of the other systems?
Not normally, but we do have a tie we can close between us and Wainwright. And this in turn ties into Golden Valley, the university, Eielson and Greeley. And we did during the flood operate, all tied together. Mm-hmm. With Wainwright out and Golden Valley's FE plant out, we were short generation for the area. So we supplied power into the grid during the flood. Mm-hmm. We're now operating isolated again by ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so in effect, when GVEA and Wainwright went up, then you were supplying power for the entire area. You were.
Well, we did for a while. We supplied all that was supplied at Wainwright. And there was a fault in the line between Wainwright and Golden Valley, and that had to be chased out the next day and cleared before they could tie in. And then the next day, Golden Valley got that fixed, got their diesels running, and we chased the trouble so that we could then tie Eielson, Golden Valley's diesels, and our plant all in together at Wainwright.
And that was Tuesday.
I think so. Yes, I know so. Tuesday afternoon sometime. But we kept Bassett Hospital alive that night during the flood. And I think that's about all the power that Wainwright was using.
And did they cut it off to their residences?
Yeah, they cleaned their board out. They wiped everything off. They were completely dead there. And they closed in on us, and then they picked up the feeder to hospital.
Nice.
And I can't say for sure, but I think that's about all they had energized that first night was the hospital out there.
Mm-hmm. But in the city, then all the lines, or most of the lines, were energized to individual residents,
yeah,
if they didn't fail.
Right.
Is there any way to estimate the electrical damage in the residences? Is this anything that you would...
No, I have no idea in the individual residences what happened. A surprising amount of them kept right on working with the basements and part of the first floor underwater.
I'm amazed. I've heard stories of people's freezers keep running right.
I turned my own house service back on while the basement was still flooded and the circuit breakers all underwater because I had to have the power and it worked.
Right. Do you anticipate any other problems in, say, before closing the system in before winter?
No, I don't really. We're going to have damage showing up for a year, hidden damage from this flood, but we just take it as it comes. I wouldn't pretend to say that by the first of the year we'll be back in the same shape we were before this flood hit us. It's going to take us next summer, too.
You were speaking of the coordination you had from the core of the system. What kind of help did this take primarily?
You mean during the flood itself?
During first.
Of course, during the flood, the Corps of Engineers immediately, I set up a flood center. Colonel Hardin, who's the Corps of Engineers, the engineer, the man in charge of Corps of Engineer District here, was in town with several of his people. And they set up to coordinate between us and what services the military could give us. Of course, you realize that the military was hit as hard as we were. And the fact that they were able to give us any help is really astounding. But they coordinated, at least for our use, these choppers, the big 6x6s, these floating tanks they had, all this kind of stuff. And of course, since then, the Corps is the agency that has written the contracts, administers the contracts, and all this stuff. They're paid for by OEP funds, but the Corps is the administrating agency.
I see. So then they would come to you. They would know the problems that you're already that you have to face, and then let the contracts to remedy the.
Right. What they've done is, with our help, we request first assistance in a particular field. With our help, they'd write a job description and specification, and then let the bid to that, award the bid, put their inspectors on the job, and. When it's all done to their satisfaction, we inspect, and if we accept, it's turned back to us.
I see. I see. What would be the normal time between your requesting it and the contracts being let?
Sometimes it starts as little as a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've noticed that apparently the Corps was warning contractors to check the board every... twice a day for contracts that would be going out.
Yeah, some of them were written in a day and posted for a day and opened the next day and awarded on the spot.
I see.
They move very fast. And then, without that kind of help, we'd still be struggling along. Can't say too much for what they've done to help.
Could you describe in, say, a little more detail your relationship to the city? How are you responsible to the city, and what kind of control? Is there a board that governs your actions?
Well, the municipal utility system is owned by the city. Mm-hmm. It's part of the city. But it's the other departments in the city are responsible to the city manager, who is hired by and responsible to the city council. In my case, I'm hired by and responsible to an elected public utility board, who in turn, under the ordinances are responsible in some things to the council, but I'm not directly responsible to the council. I'm, the Public Utility Board are my bosses. And they're basically the governing body of the municipal utility system. It's, although it's not that clean a line of division, in some things the council is responsible, in some things the board. But we're a department in the city, but a little different department than any other.
Do you think it helped or hindered you in any way to have this responsibility, or was there no concern with it at all?
There wasn't any concern. We just had a job to do and we did it. Our relations with the city are good. We had help from the Public Works Department. The front end loader we used to get our coal was theirs. We worked closely together under normal circumstances, and under these emergency ones, why, everybody had their job and did it. It worked out fine. No, my only comment is this thing has been something like military service. You know, you wouldn't do it again for $1 million, and you wouldn't really take $1 million for the experience.
So, in other words, it, the electrical system is completely operative now?
Yes.
And the phone system is about 90% with reservations that downtown is still in tough shape. And how is the steam system? I noticed
the steam system is fully operative. We had it shut down this morning to some maintenance on valves, but that was just a routine thing. Mm-hmm. And the water system is fully operative. So, barring unforeseen troubles, why, we're just about back to normal.
Do you anticipate any problems with spring breakup? Any specific problems with spring breakup?
Not unless we get an awful lot of snow and an awful fast breakup, but a normal breakup, no. Mm-hmm. And I hope we don't get clobbered twice running with a 100-year flood.
Do you, I have lost track with USGS. Do you know is the groundwater table still continuing to go down rapidly?
I haven't kept track of that either, but the evidence I see, I think our groundwater is down pretty good.
How does this affect the utilities? Do you have leakage if the groundwater is quite high? Do you have leakage into downtown utilities at all? Or?
Oh, no, not really. Our utilidors aren't that deep. Our trouble in the utilidors is when people pump their basements out into the street and the sewers are plugged up and it runs down the street and into our manholes, into the utilidor and back into their basement. We don't get rid of any water, but we probably wear it out if we pump it back and forth long enough. So the groundwater, the only way it really affects us, of course, if the groundwater is high and we get a light snow cover, it freezes down deeper and farther and gets us into trouble with our water system.
Mm-hmm.
If the ground is dry and doesn't have water in it to freeze, it's not as good a conductor.
Mm-hmm.
And we get less freeze-ups. So the ideal situation for us would be dry ground and a heavy snow before it gets a chance to really freeze deep.
And a very slow runoff.
And a slow runoff, yeah.
Then the utility bridge between here and Hamilton Acres Island Home has been reestablished. Is this reestablished within, say, first week or two? Or?
No, as far as our everything except telephones, we never lost anything in Island Home. We don't have the electrical system there. That's Golden Valley. But our water was continuous over there. And we have one river crossing into Island Homes that carries a telephone cable and one electric service to a sewer treatment plant over there. We lost that one, and that hasn't been reestablished. It's under contract. They're working on it, but it's not done yet.
Then you anticipate that you will have all the critical work done before freeze-up begins?
Yes.
And all the rest of the work can be accomplished inside it?
It might slow us up a little, but we can stand winter right now as far as keeping the utilities going and finishing up our repair work.
Did you you noticed that a great many of your people have had severe problems with housing and staying here?
I don't know. We just haven't caught up with our records enough. We do know there's an awful lot of moving around.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of disconnects, but we've had a lot of reconnects too. It looks to me like a lot of it is just a shuffling of people.
Mm-hmm.
When this stuff hit, in spite of the screaming that there was in the newspapers, there was a lot of empty apartments in town.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these have now filled up and there are empty homes. But I have no real idea how many fewer people we may have in town now than we had before the flood.
Have you had any trouble with personnel at the utility system? Any significant turnover?
No, we lost. Only one I'm aware of that we lost because of the flood is one man who had just moved up here. His family was evacuated, flew out, and they won't come back, so he's leaving.
Doesn't have an awful lot of choice there, I would imagine.
But we haven't lost any regular employees because they're leaving the country.
Mm-hmm. Could you briefly describe the episode with the Anchorage telephone matters? I just read in the paper that they decided that they didn't want to take away from the work that they thought the Fairbanks men might like, and
we had the people from Anchorage here working alongside our own people. Early in the flood, we had our people, some of them worked 24 hours the first day. We started out working 7, 18-hour days and cut back to 16-hour days, then cut back to 6, 12-hour days. We got to the point, and I have it myself, a man would work 12 hours a day here, he'd go work at home 8 hours a day mucking out his basement. By the time he had a meal or two, this just about took care of his day. We all got to the point we were coming to work in the morning and having to help each other up the steps. We were too tired to do much. So we cut our own people, part of them, back to 6, 8-hour days a week. We had about one-third of them still working 6, 12-hour days a week. We had the Anchorage crews on 6, 12-hour days. Our people didn't like the fact that the Anchorage people were getting more hours than some of them. And
5, 9, 12.
When we refused to put everybody back on 6-12s, the Anchorage people went home. The basic reason for not putting everybody on 6-12s was that we were getting less work out of a 12-hour day than we were getting out of an 8-hour day. We believe in paying for what we get, but we don't believe in spending dollars for something we're not getting. And so to solve the whole problem, the Anchorage people went home and the work that they were doing is being done by contractors.
I see.
Under this setup, why they can work different hours without griping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The contractors people are working 6 and 7 long days a week, and our people are very near normal.
Pete, you have anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much covered.